This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 22nd of September, 2021, FOMC day. And before we get to that, however, two things. We're getting some record listenership here, and as the markets have gotten a bit hairy of late, we appreciate that. It's a good support for what we're doing here. And to further support our efforts, if you're a regular listener, if you're just tuning in and like what you're hearing, please do have a look at wherever you can review this podcast. Of course, Apple Podcasts is the heaviest, where we're getting the heaviest listenership. Leave your five-star reviews. That'll help us spread the word and go up the little ranking boards as we look for, of course, broadening our listenership and supporting the program. We don't do any kind of commercial support for this. It's all about a sort of a low-level marketing effort. So have a look at that. And then secondly, Mr. Ole Hansen, we have a very timely commodity market update coming from you today as we're heading into this, or not heading into, but we've had this natural gas debacle, high energy prices, et cetera. I guess that's going to be the chief focus of your update today that people can sign up for, by the way. It's an interactive, if you want to use the old-fashioned term, a webinar that folks can sign up for and not only listen in, but also ask you questions.
That is correct, John. And just to finish off that side of things, webinars.saxo is the sign-up link. You can see that here on slide two. And also, if you are, for whatever reason, able to join me at 12 o'clock CET, there will be a replay available also at webinars.saxo sometime tomorrow. But indeed, it is the continued rally in the energy, across the energy market, that is really taking up a lot of focus right now. I'm looking at the industrial metal space as well. Is the rally over? Don't believe so. The agricultural space kind of quieting down after the harvest, but we will look at the energy market, the gas, oil, some of the other sources of energy that could also come into play. So plenty to talk about. So do join me at 12 o'clock CET.
Good stuff. Now let's look at the market action. So yesterday, an interesting session in the U.S. You can tune to slide three. The very obvious resistance level is that support level that was so key on the way down, the 50 or 55 day, which is what we use, moving average, just above 4,400. We also noted yesterday it is a local key Fibonacci retracement. I put in the bigger Fibonacci levels here all the way back to the top so we can get an idea of where the cyclical resistance is. But in any case, yesterday that rally failing ahead of resistance and then ending actually towards the lows and below the previous day's close. So pretty ugly price action. We're trying to get put together a better sentiment overnight with China back online after its very long holiday, four-day holiday, and the Evergrande story that supposedly it has met its Monday payment obligations, although some of the wording around that was a bit odd, that basically it had sort of struck a deal, it sounds like, with some of its creditors. So in any case, there was no immediate default trigger on its Monday coupon payments on bonds that were onshore renminbi bonds. The bigger one, though, is tonight's or tomorrow's Thursday dollar bond payments, coupon payments, which are higher, forgetting the number, if it was $50+ million, that coupon payment, that could be a focus. And around this whole story, whether it's the so-called Lehman moment that's being tossed around, some folks saying there's absolutely no parallels because it doesn't have the same, it's not plugged into the same kind of issues, counterparty risks, and you have the Chinese banking system and, of course, the Chinese leadership that would want to prevent any such scenario from unfolding. On the other hand, Peter, and this is where I think it's the really longer term key here, is that, yes, some kind of immediate workout is likely, but a lot of people are going to get haircut that have been investing in this sector. But whether it's the end of this tremendous property boom that's been a key driver of Chinese growth and all the implications for inputs into that boom and just, you know, a growth overhang, if you will, in years to come. I don't know what your take is there. An absurdly long lead-in, but also just where you are on the latest market action.
Yeah, so you're right about the price action in the U.S. was terrible. It was shaping up to be a very bad session. We bounced back. There are two news overnight in China. So the one is that the People's Bank of China have injected a lot of liquidity into the system through reverse repos that has soothed the market somewhat. And then we had that, which was the important news, because Bloomberg had a hot news out yesterday about that that they have skipped a payment on Monday, but that was already old news. That was very well communicated. They also restated that later into the session. So there was nothing new on Evergrande. But overnight, we got the news that the bond payments due for tomorrow, the wording is very tricky here, but at least one of the bond payments have been negotiated. So what negotiated means is we can only guess because
My understanding is that it was for the Monday. Those were the Monday payments, and it's really the Thursday payments, the dollar that we don't know yet.
All right, but the wording is a bit tricky here because it's negotiated. That sort of sounds like when it's time, but it's negotiated. That probably there is some element of haircut or a different mix of payments, so it's not only a full cash payment. Whatever it is, it's soothing the market somewhat, but. You know, take note that Evergrande's share price is continuing down in Hong Kong trading today. We have on slide 4 the Hang Seng, which is, on the other hand, is at the upper range of yesterday's trading range. So, and I think if we can close above that one and we have a positive mood in Europe this morning, then we are onto something. But I think the whole story about China's housing market and Evergrande will stay with us for some time and be a source of volatility. It's not over yet. And I think the Chinese government is still contemplating how to really play this well, because I don't think they have any love affair with the shareholders or in particular the bondholders either in Evergrande. It's all about employment and the systemic risk. They said that as well. So they don't want this to become a systemic risk, but we're not close to systemic risk yet. So where do they draw the line? We don't know. I think it will be this will ebb and flow from now on for quite some time. And this is not the last time we've talked about China's housing market and Evergrande, that's for sure.
Yeah. And then just in terms of correction targets, so we put on a couple of resistance levels. The first one, the most critical one, the 55-day, if we're looking at the back to the U.S. market here, just about 4,400. Just want to point out just for scale where we are with the correction. We saw slightly more than 5% correction from the highs at those lows, just below 4,300. The next, theoretical technical correction and full, what you can actually label a correction, would be a 10% move, which comes in for the future, at least. That is the December future now, a bit below 4,100. More like 4110 if you're looking at the cash index. Now, Ole, we've talked a lot about how this recent risk wobble has not really fed into, it has maybe fed into, and probably a lot of this is the property story, some of the industrial metals, which have corrected a bit lately, but energy is not looking at Chinese property right now. So take us through the commodity space ahead of your webinar today.
Well, actually, let's start off with the metal space, because the Evergrande news from overnight did help trigger quite a bit of a bounce in some of the in a space that's been really taking quite a bit of a tumble this week. On slide 7, you can see I just inserted copper and iron ore. Iron ore is at the is really at the center of the Chinese current clampdown on pollution, cutting steel production, thereby reducing demand for iron ore. So iron ore price early in the week collapsed below $100. It was trading above $200 just back in July. It's now up 11% the last time I looked at the screen. Copper, meanwhile, had a late afternoon sell-off yesterday, but once again, it managed to find support ahead of this $4 a pound level, and we bounced quite strongly overnight. We're now challenging some local resistance here, just above 420. And I think the performance, given what the news we had over the past week and then the past couple of months actually out of China and with regards to the property sector and the potential slowdown there, I think copper is doing phenomenally well. It should have been a lot lower if there really was a major concern about future demand. So I think it's still poised for a pop. Eventually, we need to see a higher high. So we're still stuck in a bit of a range. But overall, the underlying demand for future green, the transformation projects and focus is likely to continue to keep it supported. The energy space, what can you say? It's still very well bid. The gas market had a bit of a breather yesterday, but still there's a calculation made in the FT today indicating that if UK households should basically pay for this recent rise, and if that rise continues, remains, then it would mean almost more than a £500 increase on the average consumer's gas bill, and that's close to 1/3 increase. That is clearly a horrible extra burden if that comes to fruition. So what we'll see in energy is that crude oil is once again It's trading higher for the second day. We're back above $75. When we have gas prices at these levels, then the substitution for fuel becomes quite tempting or quite economically sound in several places where you're not concerned about pollution, where it's more question of what can you afford to buy. So we will see some substitution into fuel products this winter if these gas prices continues to at these levels. That will add an extra dimension to the underlying recovery in fuel in crude oil demand. At the same time, 300,000 barrels idle in the Gulf of Mexico for another for the remainder of the year, according to Shell. And then overnight, we had last night we had API basically saying that they saw another 6 million barrel drop in crude oil stocks last week. If we're getting close to that level by the EIA this afternoon, then we got crude oil stocks in the US at the lowest levels in 3 years. And as you can see in the insert there on slide 8, gasoline stocks are already falling off a cliff. So that all basically means that we got tightness in the oil market. And I've been a little bit more cautious in terms of outlook. There's been looking for that 65, 75, but with the hurricane Ida taking supplies out of the market with the current gas crunch, then we will have to get used to a higher range here now in crude oil over the coming months. And we can see that also in the tightness in the time spreads on the Brent crude forward curve. We are trading at very elevated levels, so the spot price is trading elevated relatively to further out, and that is an indicator of a market that's tight. So the energy market is probably the go-to market right now.
All right, and you mentioned people burning dirtier fuels to replace natural gas potentially. Well, there's one place, a story cropped up on my radar screen yesterday. Poland, which still burns some lignite, apparently lignite is, I believe, all lignite is so-called brown coal, which is pretty nasty stuff in terms of the pollution level you get relative to the heating value. But there's a very large lignite mine that is used for driving some power stations, responsible for some 7% of Polish energy. And a high European court has ruled that this the government must pay €500,000 per day in fines if it's going to keep this mine running. And Poland is refusing to shut the mine down. It's just adding to this whole so-called rule of law, and especially the potential for a climate focus post the German election, where there's a lot of pro-climate initiatives on the agenda. If we get a red-green government, I think it's increasing the risk of a major showdown. So on slide 5, I put up EuroHuff, the Hungarian forint on the left, and then Euro Zloty or the Polish Zloty on the right. And you can see the Zloty is getting towards the bottom, or the Euro Zloty is getting towards the top of the range, a weak Zloty. And I think the risks there are quite interesting. Adding to that, we've got a very high headline CPI levels coming out of Poland and a central bank that essentially is reluctant to signal any tightening. And then on the left, the Hungarian central bank signaling it is slowing down its pace of rate hikes, or not hiking as much as expected, at least. I think it was the same hike amount as previous ones, only hiking by 15 basis points rather than the 25 expected. That saw the Huff a bit weaker yesterday before strengthening again, maybe on the risk bounce back. And then you're seeing some fiscal initiatives aimed at pleasing voters ahead of important elections next year in Hungary. So just a small sideshow, of course, but an interesting space to watch. But more interesting for the bigger market, the bigger currencies, is today's FOMC, of course, and whether it's really particularly relevant. I think that's my favorite scenario here today. But just briefly for the technicals and where we are trend-wise, have a look at slide 6. We've got the FX board with your latest trend readings there on the right. And you can see Eurodollar trading really heavily. I mean, the bounce backs have been very modest affair so far. It looks very heavy to me ahead of this FOMC meeting. I'm not sure we're going to get a message that supports the euro versus the dollar in any way. Key trigger level there, 116.64 for potential follow-through towards perhaps 115. But if I'm looking at the FOMC and what the market is talking about, it's all about supposedly about taper. of course, if there's any shift in longer term inflation rates, that would be, I think, a risky maneuver for the Fed because it would unseat confidence in the markets. But they probably can't avoid the more hawkish members shifting their dot plots regardless. So just interesting to see that mix. And then interesting, I think, in terms of scenarios, I believe the most interesting scenario would be the market realizes the FOMC is really not what's on the agenda right now. Whether they taper in October or whether they taper in November or December is irrelevant when we've got big issues like the Evergrande situation. We have the risk of a fiscal cliff early next year. And we have, especially coming hard and fast, this debt ceiling issue where there's all kinds of knotty problems around getting that cleared. And we could be risking the biggest showdown there since the 2013 cycle. And it was properly disruptive, those cycles back then. Have a look back at what happened, where you had government shutdowns, government employees missing payments, et cetera. So there's some big risks around that. And we'll sharpen up what the latest is there in coming podcasts. But Peter, I don't want to leave you hanging too much longer. We've got plenty going on in equities as well. And you've got with us, of course, the focus recently has been on FedEx. That was a really interesting story you highlighted yesterday. I guess they've been out reporting. And what else do you have for us today?
Yeah, they reported and shares were down 5%. They're cutting their fiscal outlook, and they were having, you know, they were for the first quarter that ended in end of August, a month ago. They were in line basically for the quarter on revenue, but then their operating margins were 2 percentage points lower than expected, and their earnings per share were really hard hit. And the case for FedEx is that there is a labor shortage of low skilled workers in the US, and they have big troubles finding enough truck drivers. And you know, e-commerce growth is still growing at around 10% per year, and they expect that to be the growth rate until 2026. So there's a huge demand for truck drivers. And in some of their logistics hubs, wages have actually gone up 25% in just 1 year. I put in on slide 9 the share price. They were down 5% from that close you see there. And I've put in a small insert of the financials, so you can see their revenue for the quarter was up 14%. Their earnings per share were down 10%, and their free cash flow is really under pressure here. So the story for FedEx is that massive investments, rising costs on fuel, and particular wages. So this is something to really watch. And I think if FedEx is any signal here, then we would expect that to translate positively for these low income workers in the US that have recently enjoyed a higher wage growth than the median labor market, which I guess that this is really good news because they have been underperforming for 30 years. And how that translates to inflation and the rest of the US economy will take another time. Another company that reported after the market closed was Adobe. Their share price was down 4%, and that was despite actually putting out a pretty rosy outlook, to say the least. But maybe the rally in just somewhat in just 3 or 4 or 5 months from around 500 to 650 a couple of days ago was probably just too much. The expectation was simply too high. But this is still a company that is on fire. You can see that their revenue growth is 26% across the board. It's just a money machine. Like, there are very few companies in this world that have this type of machine, and they have a very, very strong market position, and they're expanding their business. So there's not much I can say here. It is what it is. It was down 4%, but it was just because of the high expectations. And then staying with the story, John, I think the FedEx, and I mentioned that on their internal call, the big question is whether we're moving into the Q3 earnings season in 3 weeks' time. The question is the margin squeeze, because we're coming off the historically high profit margins, almost 12% in the S&P 500. Are we rolling over? Are we finally getting, you know, our companies being bitten by these higher costs? And General Mills, which is, if you're in the US, you probably know this company. It's a very big consumer foods business. And they are also being pressured by higher wages and supply chain expenses and elevated input costs from commodities. So I'm curious if they report as well. They report before the market opens in the US. If they report as well, the same thing as FedEx, maybe we've got two warning shots of what to expect in Q3. Q3 earnings, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Also, that contrast. I mean, you're just in those two companies you just mentioned, and then General Mills as well, between companies that operate extremely intensively in the physical world versus those that are selling a product that, the only physical requirement is really the electricity to run the office for the people, the programmers, and those at the other end consuming the product. So very interesting, those physical world limits, which is a huge theme of ours, that the physical world is not big enough for some of these initiatives we want to overlay on top of the economy, green initiatives and otherwise. All right. Did you want to talk up anything coming up today besides General Mills? So you've got Nike up tomorrow.
No, yeah, there is Nike tomorrow, but they will report after the close, so we'll take one. But I will come back to that theme you mentioned, John, because I think the whole online versus offline, this is a hugely interesting story, and it's something we'll touch on in the next couple of months in many of our presentations with clients.
All right, good stuff. And let's recall what's up today. And of course, it is the FOMC meeting, and to what degree this is a trigger for the market or not. I would be aware of headline reactions, especially if these are to a so-called dovish side, because I'm not sure really the market is reacting to the FOMC here, or that there's much at stake over what the FOMC is about to do here, unless, of course, they're ready to shock on the hawkish side, which I'm certainly not expecting. But let's have a look. Let's have a look at Chair Powell's press conference half an hour later. There's also a Brazilian rate decision. They're expected to hike another 100 basis points afterwards, and some interesting central bank meetings tomorrow as well, with the Norwegian Central Bank and BOE up tomorrow, not to mention Turkish Central Bank as well. So we've got markets trying to piece together a rally once again as Chinese markets are back online after their holiday. Hang Seng was actually closed overnight, the cash session. Let's see where things stand tomorrow, and we'll be back, of course, to cover it with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.